listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO, 8:05 Central Time. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is Thursday, May 28th. 8:05 means it is time to study the daily New Testament reading. Our guest pastor joining us by phone this morning, the Reverend Nicholas Wirtz from Faith Lutheran Church in Overgard, Arizona. Good morning, Pastor Wirtz.
Good morning.
Good to have you as our guest this morning. I'd love to hear about your congregation and community, Faith Lutheran Church in Overgard, Arizona.
Okay, well, we are we're a small congregation. In the wintertime, we grow some. In the summertime, we're kind of a seasonal mountain community. We get, instead of getting skiers up so much, what we do is we get people escaping the heat in the summertime. what else can I tell you about it? I love Overgard. You're not going to pry me out of here with dynamite. It's beautiful, beautiful country, pine trees, blue skies. Lots of place to ride my motorcycle, kayaking, fishing, hunting, all that kind of stuff.
Well,
like being retired and getting paid for it.
Well, tell us about the congregation there. How long has Faith been there in Overgard?
About 10 years. It was started by a group of lay people that Lutherans got up here. There was no Lutheran church. They started a Bible study and then decided that maybe they could make a church happen and talk to the English district folks and began putting ads in the paper for more Lutherans. And as they gathered enough, they finally called in some help from a retired pastor to come and serve them during the summertime when they were up here. And that's how it grew. And eventually it became a full-time congregation. One of calling me. I think I'm their second called pastor here.
Well, thanks be to God that you are called there to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ in beautiful Overgard, Arizona, and that the saints can gather around and receive his good gifts and take that message of Jesus Christ out into their daily lives, into their community as well. Today we are studying Luke chapter 23, verses 1 through 25. Pastor, what would you like for us to know about this text before we dig in?
Well, this surprised me. I didn't realize that this time of year we'd be dealing with passion type stuff. But this is the trial of, or just well, the Roman trial of Jesus. So it's when the Jews they got to figure out a way to the Jewish leaders get Jesus killed, and so they trump up some charges against them with regard to raise an insurrection against Rome and bring this before Pilate. And so before Pilate and before King Herod, they try and make their case so that they can get rid of Jesus because he's awfully annoying to them.
Let's take a look at the text, shall we? You're right. It is I found by studying this daily lectionary, the from the Treasury of Daily Prayer, that things that we, you know, in the regular lectionary, in the, you know, the Sunday morning lectionary, in that pericope, we would find during those seasons, you know, covering the Passion during Lent and Holy Week. And now we find ourselves studying it. And it's kind of nice. I find that it helps me think through these things outside of those seasons and sometimes look at them from a different perspective. So I'm looking forward to studying with you this morning. Listeners, if you have a question on the text today in Luke 23, give us an email. Send us an email, kfuo@kfuo.org. As we're studying with Pastor Nicholas Wirtz at Faith Lutheran Church in Overgard, Arizona, Luke 23, let's take a look at verses 1 through 5. Then the whole company of them arose and brought him before Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding us to give tribute to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king." And Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered him, "You have said so." Then Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowds, "I find no guilt in this man." But they were urgent, saying, "He stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea from Galilee even to this place." All right. So the whole company of them arose and brought him before Pilate. Who is this whole company that brought him before Pilate?
Well, it's basically the Jewish leaders. It was the Sanhedrin that he was brought before, the the group of 70 elders that lead the religious community, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, mostly the Pharisees would be involved here. And then the people that had risen with them, they had brought up to bring false charges. So we have the crowds. It's an interesting crowd. It's a different crowd than was a week before. We have a crowd a week before that comes in and praises him as the king. And this particular crowd is a crowd without faith that is kind of following a mob mentality. So with the Jewish leaders and the crowd of accusers that they have brought before to bring this charge.
So this crowd, the whole company of them arose and brought him before Pilate. They began to accuse him, saying, "We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding us to give tribute to Caesar and saying that he himself is Christ, a king." Those are some accusations to bring against Jesus. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, these are the only ones that they can really bring that are going to be of any interest to Pilate, because he's interested in things that are imperial, that are concerning the Roman Empire. He hasn't any interest at all in their religious disputes. And so they have to find something that where he's breaking Roman law. And so basically it's a charge of insurrection to raise up himself as a king and also to revolt, to refuse to pay taxes, which reminds me of the Satan, the devil, the great deceiver. The way that he works is the best lies are lies that are twisted out of a little bit of truth. He did claim to be a king, and he did address the issue of paying taxes. But his kingdom was not a political kingdom. It was not one that had anything to do with Rome or this world in its present condition, although it coexists with it. And the refusal to pay taxes thing is a distortion of a discussion that they had just had, where he said, give to Caesar that which is Caesar's and give to Rome that which is Rome. They tried to trick him into condemning himself one way or the other by asking, should we pay taxes to Caesar? And he says, well, bring me the coin whose head is on it. Oh, Caesar's. Well, give that to him. Give God what belongs to God.
And Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered him, "You have said so."
Yeah, this is one that helps to get some context with the Gospel of John as well, where John elaborates as to what else Jesus said. He in both places said, yes, you have said so. And in John we hear him say, "But my kingdom is not a kingdom of this world." So he's saying, yes, I'm a king, but not in any way that you have to be worried about, because you're dealing with one kingdom and I'm dealing with another. Not that Pilate understands all of that. I think he thinks Jesus is kind of maybe a little bit of a nutcase or something, and sees him as harmless.
And so Jesus responds, "You have said so." Then Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowds, "I find no guilt in this man." But they were urgent, saying, "He stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea from Galilee even to this place." Pilate says, "I don't find anything guilty, nothing guilty of death, at least."
Yeah, and that's an official decree. In other words, he examines the charges that are brought against him, and he finds him not guilty of those charges. And yet the people are urging him to find the guilt. They want, this is a kangaroo court. They want it to be a kangaroo court, and they want the verdict that they want. And right now he's trying to resist. It's interesting, because Pilate's not really a very nice guy, but in this case he's acting correctly as an official of justice. He's making an official proclamation of law of finding that the verdict is not guilty. There is no evidence to support their claim.
And so they were urgent, saying he stirs up people, teaching throughout all Judea, from Galilee even to this place. They really just wanted to, they wanted to make it clear that they want Jesus to be found guilty. They don't want him to go on from here.
Yeah, and they use the words, he stirs up people in all these areas. Certainly, he has taught people in all these areas. But nothing could be further from the truth that, you know, when we look at the Gospels and we look at what Jesus did, he wasn't a rabble-rouser. He didn't stir up trouble. He taught quietly. He taught publicly and openly. He didn't meet in the secret of night. Nicodemus came and saw him at night one time, but that wasn't, to plan insurrection or anything. He taught them to live peacefully. He taught them to live morally right. He taught them to obey the authorities that were over them. He was not, quote unquote, stirring people up. He was teaching and being listened to throughout all of these areas.
Pastor, anything else about verses 1-5 before we go on to the next section?
No, I think we've covered it well.
All right, let's take a look at verses 6 and following. When Pilate heard this, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him over to Herod, who was himself in Jerusalem at that time. When Herod saw Jesus, he was very glad, for he had long desired to see him because he had heard about him. And he was hoping to see some sign done by him. So he questioned him at some length, but he made no answer. The chief priests and the scribes stood by vehemently, accusing him. And Herod, with his soldiers, treated him with contempt and mocked him. And Herod, with his soldiers, and then arraying him in splendid clothing, he sent him back to Pilate. And Herod and Pilate became friends with each other that very day, for before this they had been at enmity with each other. So Pilate heard this. He asked whether the man was a Galilean. When he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him over to Herod, who was himself in Jerusalem at the time. This isn't my issue. I'm sending you over to Herod.
Yeah, it's like, let's see if I can get rid of this problem. Herod's in town, and Herod would be in town for the festival of the Passover. So being a Jew, quote unquote, he's at least connected with the Jewish community and placed as the tetrarch by Caesar over this area. Herod, we want to remember what kind of man Herod is. Herod he's not the most moral of people. He has abandoned his own wife for his brother Philip's wife. And at her bequest, winds up cutting off John the Baptist's head and giving it on a platter to her. So one would think that, you know, this guy might not be the best guy to send somebody to if you want justice done. And yet, it's a way of getting rid of the problem. You know, Herod is acting under the authority of Rome, so maybe Herod can make some kind of Roman decision that's going to please this crowd. Certainly, and I think this is going to come up later, Pilate doesn't want the crowd to get out of hand, because if he has a riot on his hands, then he has to deal with his superiors back in Rome. And if you fail in the armpit of the Roman Empire, then there's nowhere else for you to go. So the Roman Empire didn't look too kindly on this area. They thought they're always making trouble, these Jewish people. They're just hard to keep down. So he goes to Herod, and Herod wants to see him because he's heard about him. Certainly being in Judea, Jesus is a famous person by this time. 3 years he's been going around Galilee and Judea, especially the last a year and a half in Judea, and so maybe he can see him, do some magic, do a miracle. This would be really cool, and that's why he's exceedingly happy to see him. Maybe Jesus will be a trained monkey for him and do something that will amuse him.
We're studying the Daily New Testament reading today with Pastor Wirtz from Faith Lutheran Church in Overgard, Arizona. We're in Luke chapter 23, verses 1 through 25. If you have a question or a comment, email us, kfuo@kfuo.org. We need to take a quick break. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO.
By calling 800-TEL-LINK, you're connected to the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services toll-free confidential information line for maternal and child health. TEL-LINK operators will connect you directly to resources on healthy pregnancy and parenting, WIC, immunizations, mental health services, child care services, and much more. For assistance with maternal and child health, call 800-TELL-LINK. That's 800-835-5465.
Sponsored by the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services.
In this corner, weighing in at 170 pounds with the sage wisdom of age, Pastor Jolly John Lukumsky.
And in this corner, weighing in at over 300 pounds with the quick thinking of youth, Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark.
Yeah.
Weighing in at over 300 pounds?
Well, Matt, the radio easily adds 50 pounds.
But I'm not over 200.
Oh, Matt.
Wrestling with the basics.
Saturday mornings at 9 on KFUO, the messenger of good news.
You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO. We're studying the Daily New Testament reading today with Pastor Nicholas Wirtz from Faith Lutheran Church in Overgard, Arizona. We're in Luke chapter 23, verses 1 through 25. Right now we're at Luke 23, verse 18. When Herod saw Jesus, he was very glad, for he long desired to see him, because he had heard about him and was hoping to see some sign by him. So he questioned him at some length, but he made no answer. So Herod was really wanted to see Jesus. As you said, he was hoping for maybe some display, some magic, something, some signs to show who he was.
And you know, it's, I guess, you know, you don't have television back then, or movies or Netflix or anything to go to. So anything that would entertain him. And he was certainly a man that pursued his entertainment to great depths.
So he questioned him at some length, but he made no answer. Herod questioned him, but Jesus made no answer.
Yeah, again, and we're reminded by Isaiah, you know, as a lamb before shears is silent, so, you know, he said nothing. Jesus has nothing to say to Herod. Jesus is speaking, has come to call people to repentance, to proclaim to them the kingdom of God and God's mercy and love and grace. And being God and being omniscient, he knows that Herod is not interested in any of these things. Nothing that Jesus has to say would interest Herod, so he says nothing.
And the chief priests and the scribes stood by, vehemently accusing him, and Herod with his soldiers treated him with contempt and mocked him. Everybody just like before he was Pilate, the chief priests, the scribes, continued to accuse him, and Herod with his soldiers treated him with contempt and mocked him. Then arraying him in splendid clothing, he sent him back to Pilate.
The mocking is, you know, we think of, and we've seen it, you know, in some of the movies about the Passion, where they try and show this in a way, but really the mocking has to do with Jesus' claims that he is a king, and so they're going to jump on that and find ways to ridicule him around that idea, even putting on him, arraying him in a gorgeous robe, I believe the King James says. This wouldn't be the purple robe that the Roman soldiers are going to put on him later, but more likely some kind of a white robe. White was the Jewish color, the Jewish royal color. Again, part of this mocking, to say, okay, you say you're a king, here you are, here you're royal. Royal Jewish colors, and we'll send you back to Pilate. And in doing so, sending him back to Pilate, he should have just released Jesus. He had Jesus in his custody. It was entirely up to him what to do. And he finds in our text too, he finds no guilt in the men either. He finds them totally unamusing and boring, but he finds no guilt as to the charges brought against him. Yet he sends him back to Pilate and then makes himself complicit in this eventual murder of an innocent man.
And here's what's interesting for me, verse 12, and Herod and Pilate became friends with each other that very day, for before this they had been at enmity with each other. Now they find they have something in common.
Yeah, that's always been a rough one for me as well. Certainly there's enmity between them. Probably as we look in Scripture, there's the massacre of the Galileans that's talked about in chapter 13. And maybe even there's a dispute as far as jurisdiction, who's going to be controlling what part of the area. And this animosity is now they have both shared this Jesus diversion has reduced their enmity in some way. It appears, at any rate, remarkable that this delicate psychologist Luke, who records this, mentions that somehow they become public friends. It's an unexpected reconciliation, and I'm not sure how the sharing of the mocking and the unjust treatment of Jesus made this happen, but evil works in strange ways.
Verse 13, Pilate then called together the chief priests and the rulers and the people and said to them, "You brought me this man as one who was misleading the people, and after examining him before you, behold, I did not find this man guilty of any of your charges against him, neither did Herod, for he sent him back to us. Look, nothing deserving death has been done by him. I will therefore punish and release him." Again, Pilate says, I don't find anything. I don't find him guilty of anything.
Yeah, repeating again, he's acting in official capacity. He says, look, the evidence is just completely lacking in with regard to the charge that has been brought. My verdict is not guilty based on the evidence yet. You know, while trying to remain, I guess, faithful to his calling as a public official and do things according to law, he does capitulate to them. He doesn't want to displease them. Again, we're thinking, how this is going to look on his record. So perhaps if he beats Jesus up quite a bit, this will this will appease the crowd, and he goes for that. And in that very way, he betrays the justice that he's trying to hold himself to.
Anything else about this section up through verse 16 before we go on to the next section?
The thing that strikes me the most is how he tries to hang on to some thread of justice. He says clearly, nothing worthy of death has been done by him. He makes an official proclamation, but we can see that he's beginning to cave to the pressure of the crowds around him. And I think this is very applicable, today. We have seen this even in the United States. We see it all over the world. We see it throughout history, where we have officials who are in official capacity are looking for a way to present themselves as just, and yet they bow down to the crowd or the mob mentality and say, all right, we'll give you this. We'll allow you to go this far. And so things haven't changed in all these years. Evil still really can't hold up true justice.
Let's take a look at verse 18 and following in the last paragraph here. But they all cried out together, "Away with this man, and release to us Barabbas." A man who had been thrown into prison for an insurrection started in the city and for murder. Pilate addressed them once more, desiring to release Jesus, but they kept shouting, "Crucify, crucify him." A third time he said to them, "Why, what evil has he done? I have found him in no guilt, deserving death. I will therefore punish and release him." But they were urgent, demanding with loud cries that he should be crucified, and their voices prevailed. So Pilate decided that their demand should be granted. He released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, for whom they asked, but he delivered Jesus over to their will. So they cried out together, "Away with this man, release to us Barabbas."
Yeah, I go right to the end on this one here, just this whole idea of Pilate capitulating to the crowd. Finally, he gives in and he gives them what they want. This is what we've seen. This is the direction that he's been going, and this is what happens. But this is also the direction that God wanted things to go. Things had to go this way. Jesus had to be punished for a sin that he did not commit. And this is why I gravitated in the little homily section to this section right here, because we have this exchange that takes place between Barabbas and Jesus. They cry out, "Hand us Barabbas." And we know that Barabbas is an insurrectionist and a murderer. And we know also that there is a custom, interestingly, that on this holy day to the Jews, that it's a custom, it's not a law, but by custom on this holy day, they would release one Jewish prisoner in recognition of this Jewish holy day. It was the one Roman recognition of the Jewish religious life. And so we have this exchange set up between Barabbas and Jesus. We have a totally guilty man, guilty of insurrection and guilty of murder, who is going to be exchanged for a totally innocent man in this final judgment, in this final declaration. And so the final judgment of Pilate, while when we look at it from our point of view, seems totally unjust, it is in fact the exact judgment of God and the bringing of God's justice to the world that needs it. And that is that according to God's law, insurrection against him and murder of our fellow men, and Jesus explains murder of our fellow men. He says, look, if you even have bad thoughts about your neighbor, you've committed murder in your heart already. These things must be punished, and the wages of sin is death. The punishment for sin, any sin, is death, and so death must be administered to satisfy justice. The odd thing is that it doesn't fall, this judgment doesn't fall on the guilty. It falls on the innocent and is paid for by the innocent Jesus, which brings us to who Barabbas is and who we are. We are Barabbas. We, in our sin, are just as guilty of insurrection, not just against Rome, but against God in every way when we rebel against his will and his desire for us. And we are just as guilty, of course, of murder as well. We deserve this. And yet to us is given, as was given to Barabbas, the judgment for the innocent. You could say a pardon, but it's more than a pardon. It is a judgment of more than not guilty. It is a judgment of completely innocent, and that's given to us. We become Christ. Well, not Christ. Careful there. We become the innocent man Jesus in the eyes of God. We are covered with his righteousness and his innocence.
Looking over the text as a whole today, Pastor, anything that you would like for us to learn from this text as a whole? Anything else you'd like for us to learn today in Luke 23, verses 1 through 25?
Well, I really gravitate to the wisdom and the grace and the mercy of God that is shown in the final section of this text. To see in this text that God's hand that works through history and through human, I guess, action, you know, what we do, our lives. I think of Paul's letter to the Romans when he says, all things work together for good for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. So that God has a plan of salvation in place for us, has had since before we even came into existence. He knew how we were going to go. And he uses where we are and who we are to work his plan. It's amazing to me that he can do this. And his plan has always been to sacrifice his own son so that we might have life, to bring to us the possibility, or not the possibility, to bring to us the reality that existed in the Garden of Eden, that we should be able to walk with God together, that God should dwell among us and be with us, and as he was in the garden, as he was in the temple and the tabernacle, and then the eventual temple and tabernacle in Jesus Christ himself, God dwelling with man, Emmanuel, has come to us to do everything that is divinely possible to rescue us from the condition that our sin has put us in, even at the cost of the life of his own innocent son. And I can't think of anything that shows more love than that sacrifice. And it just amazes me and makes me very grateful. Mm-hmm. That we have a God who loves us so much. There's so much gospel in this story that seems so dark and so unjust. There is so much grace and so much mercy and so much good news in this story.
We've been studying the daily New Testament reading today with Pastor Nicholas Wirtz from Faith Lutheran Church in Overgard, Arizona. Pastor Wirtz, thanks so much for being our guest pastor and helping us study Luke chapter 23 today.
Well, thank you for having me.
God bless you and all the saints at Faith Lutheran Church in Overgard, Arizona. Coming up in just a little bit, we have some sacred music to help sanctify your morning. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.